Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Coming up in this edition of TV Black Box, Spotlight returns despite headlines claiming otherwise. Former Sunrise EP Michael Pell and Seven part ways, and Nine schedules Jeopardy to die. Welcome to the podcast where people in the industry get their news recorded live in front of a streaming audience. This is TV Black Box.
This is TV Black Box, bringing you the inside goss from the TV industry.
Hello there, I'm Rob McKnight, and this is TV Black Box. We do what we say on the tin. It's a TV Black Box. It's where all the information about television is stored, and the people who are going to extract the Black Box tonight are TV presenter David Robbo Robinson. Hello, Robbo.
Morning, everyone. Great to be here. Can't wait to talk about TV because, look, it's going to be tough that there's not much that's happened over the past week. So we're probably going to be scratching the bottom of the barrel.
We'll be we'll have to come up with a few anecdotes and TV stories. Also joining us is the viewer's advocate. You know him as Mulk. I know him as Mulky Mulk. Hello, Steve.
We'll make some shit up tonight, Rob. Good evening, everyone. It's great to have you on board with the TV Black Box podcast. I'd like to start by acknowledging the Darkinjung mob, the land on which I'm coming to you from, and pay my respects to their elders past and present. I'd also like to kick off by saying that tonight is sponsored by BWS and Copperberg, hard ginger alcoholic brew. 8.3%, friends. That's a lot of percents.
Might get a bit loose in here tonight. And I am coming to you this week from the Meriton Suites in Zetland. I was at Meriton last week in Waterloo. It's Zetland this week. Who knows where I'll be next week? Maybe up my own ass.
Original owner.
All right, let's get into the stories of the week. And shock horror, we're talking about Spotlight. Because Justice Michael Lee has confirmed he will hand down his verdict in the Bruce Lerman defamation trial on Monday morning. It comes as Seven confirmed Spotlight will return to our television screens on Sunday night at 8:45, looking at the Ozempic revolution. Confirmation of the return of the show that I work on comes despite many in the media assuming it would be cancelled due to the outrageous actions of a former producer who misused a company credit card without authorization. All right, Mulk and Robbo, I know you've got things to say about this topic. Mulk, you're up first.
Rob, thanks. It's been, I think I'm not stretching it by saying it's been a fraught week for, all of the people that work within Spotlight. You know, there's been significant pressure from elements of the media, press, printed as much as broadcast media, calling for all sorts of things. Oh, there's no question there's been some misreporting take place. Fine with that.
And we talked about the fact that I jump in here. Even to raise that issue, it's interesting. Someone on the Spotlight team who isn't a producer said to me today, I never realised how much journalists lie. Now, if you look even headlines and examples of Seven spent money on hookers and cocaine. No, they didn't. Mm. It was the former producer who's brought this into the public domain who did that. Yes. And Seven said, no, we've never authorised that, and he paid back the money. So how is that Spotlight's fault?
Well, it depends on how deep we want to get into the whole thing, right? I acknowledge everything that you've said as being somebody inside the organisation that would know. The evidence that Taylor Auerbach has presented as a part of his it's not a submission, was it? He was called before, legitimately before the justice in the 10, you know, limb and defamation.
Well, he wasn't called by the justice. I think he ended up being subpoenaed, but he supplied an affidavit to 10.
He turned up. He got told he had to turn up. He turned up. He said some things. And he turned up ostensibly with receipts. And look, we have to acknowledge that the justice said that not everything that came out of Taylor's position necessarily holds water from a completely truthful point of view. I don't think I'm out.
And that was in reaction to Lisa Wilkinson's barrister saying that he was an honest and credible witness. And Justice Michael Lee said, well, hang on, let's not, and I'm paraphrasing here, he said, let's not pretend that he is doing it for the services of His Majesty.
Sure.
He said this was a vendetta.
The justice acknowledged that he might have an axe to grind. We can lean into that.
But I don't even necessarily receipts, that hasn't been proven in the court.
Okay, hold on. I've got to butt in then. So obviously, he has said things in court. He said things under oath. Clearly, they were strong enough for Justice Lee to admit them into the case.
Justice Lee admitted that he was possibly not a great witness,
possibly not the best evidence. But the fact is, though, that he clearly had things to say that Justice Lee allowed the case to continue. To be reopened by Network 10. No, it didn't have to be.
Justice Lee did, because he said this case is a high-profile case, and in the interests of transparency, he said, I have no choice but to reopen this case.
He's got the facts to prove it. There are facts in there. He does have facts. He's not just
Have been proven? First of all, Justice Michael Lee hasn't handed down his verdict. No. Equal facts.
I know that we talked about this, but every single sentence that Malk and I say doesn't mean that it needs a rebuttal directly from you. So we need to have a discussion here. So I understand that you want to interrupt, and that's fine. But not Malk has said one sentence each time, and then you've butted in each time with a response. So we have to have a little bit
because
more
you're
of
making
a,
misstatements.
A discussion. But we have to have a bit of a discussion, though, don't we?
But you're making misstatements, and I'm not allowed to correct that.
You need to wait a little bit while we talk about things before you come in and
correct them.
I think that that's important. Malk, I think you should continue. Malk has not been able to get a single you know sentence out without you saying something about it. I think that should be acknowledged, though. So, Malk, what are you saying?
And we're back in 3, 2. Hi, everyone. I appreciate that there's a lot of before I dive back into it, I apologize. There's a lot of energy and feeling and understanding in this, as you acknowledged from the top, Rob. You work in Spotlight. You're a part of that team at the moment. And so you know a whole bunch of stuff that we don't, even stuff that you can't talk about publicly. Fine. Completely cool. At this point, all I'm going to offer is ostensibly some of my own thinking, along with for lack of a better way of saying it, regurgitation of the reporting around what's going on.
And you're allowed to have your own opinions on what you think Spotlight, but
totally
without wanting to be spoken to like a child again. The point I make is, Robbo, you were making misstatements. You said Taylor Allback had presented evidence and they were facts. It is up to the justice to Justice Michael Lee to determine whether that any evidence is reliable and is a fact. That is not for us. But also, he didn't have the receipts. He didn't have the receipts for the invoice that he claimed. And yeah, okay, you know what? Maybe he has revealed, as no journalist should ever do, a possible source. I don't know if Bruce Lerman was the source of that material. Mark Llewellyn, the executive producer, is the only person who really knows that. He's never told anyone. But Taylor's gone out of his way to possibly reveal a source. So that's one thing. So if Bruce Lerman is found to have given out that evidence, then he has broken some protocols and possibly contempt of court. I don't know the legalities on that. But to say anything has been proven against Spotlight, sorry, sir, I just don't think you're right.
Nothing has, but he's presented, though, evidence to the court, and it's up to Justice Lee whether he accepts them or not. Let's get back to Spotlight, though, for the moment. Look, I think that Seven News is the most profitable brand for the network. Okay, so it is the brand that brings in money for the network. The fact that they've called it Seven News Spotlight, I think, was always a mistake from the very beginning because you can't separate the news brand. So we knew that 60 Minutes was separate, but you know, under the larger umbrella of Nine News, but it was never connected. I think this is the problem. I think that Seven Spotlight has tarnished that. I think that if Spotlight continues, it is a very bad thing for the brand of Seven News. So you either have to rebrand it again. So we did Sunday Night, then we did Spotlight. It needs to be rebranded because you cannot tarnish your number one brand of a network with a show that, whether right or wrong, and right, Rob, it'll be proven in court, whether they've done the wrong thing or not, or if it's a good place to be part of. We've obviously seen lots of articles over the past couple of weeks to say that, you know, lots of past and present producers, people who have worked on the show, it's a robust place to work, let's call it that. I think that there was also an article saying that 60 Minutes, with their Beirut scandal, you know, with the kidnapping and things like that, anyone who's trying to compare that is apples and oranges. We're talking about a possible show where the executive producer has said, we will go to any lengths to get the story. We'll do whatever it takes. But there
you
are
didn't mean that literally.
But sorry, mate. Sorry, but we're talking about grabs. We're talking about comments. The man made a comment and said, we will do whatever it takes to get the story.
So you now, think he authorized hookers and cocaine?
I never said that, but I'm just saying that that's the environment that is possibly being created at the Spotlight.
I work
offices,
in that environment, and that's a load of bullshit. It's bullshit. Okay. I work there, and I'm telling
so I'm
you,
jump,
that is not.
I'm
going to
jump in on this one,
but that's what I'm saying, though. But the point is, it's right a show that can't continue. It's going to have a soft launch, and I'm telling you right now, I believe that the soft exit of the show,
it's
the date has already been decided.
We've launched the promo tonight for Ozempic. It's full steam ahead.
No one's going to, I mean, okay, fine. But it's already done for. You can't keep
bullshit.
That program.
I have never, no one has said to me, oh, we're doing a soft launch, Rob. That would mean no promos for the week.
Yeah, but
we
it
are
can't keep
tonight
going,
launching
though.
A it promo early.
Okay, fine, but it can't keep going. That show cannot keep going.
No, that's your opinion in an enclosed media bubble. The viewing population doesn't give a shit about this as much as you guys do.
Rob, stop. We're on a TV podcast talking about our opinions of TV shows. So what do you want? I'm giving you my opinion of a TV show that we're talking about.
I'm disagreeing with your opinion.
That's okay, but you don't need to shut me off while I'm trying to give that to you. Simple. We're on a panel show. We need to give our opinions.
To help draw us back, and I'll interject, I apologize for interrupting, fellas. There's a lot of passion in the middle of this, and I appreciate that that's the case. It would be best, I think, for us to shy away from conversations around the legal case, particularly because I don't want us to land in any kind of situation where we might compromise that.
I can talk legally about the case. I've watched every minute of it.
And
you can't.
I can't.
Sorry?
I can talk about it, but not in a way that is necessarily other than throwing an alleged in front of stuff. I have no legal skill to be able to talk about any of that in a safe context. But it's besides that, frankly, it's moot. We know the stuff that we know is that Taylor has given some information, evidence ostensibly, to the judge about the stuff that he knew, and he acknowledged that he said he did. He's made some claims about the culture within 7 years Spotlight that haven't been tested. And I appreciate that's a really difficult thing, because in the context of this defamation case, for him to say X and not allow ostensibly Seven's lawyers or, you know, Mark as the EP or anyone else to be able to go, that's not how it is, because that's not actually the core of what's going on. They're looking at this other thing, and this other thing may turn into a separate lawsuit. We'll see what that does for itself. The challenge around it for Spotlight is in no small part along the lines of what Robbo has talked about. There is growing pressure within the media. I acknowledge that, Rob, and that is a very small subset of the wider Australian population.
Media love a scalp.
Right? Absolutely they do, and we've seen that play out many, many times before.
And
the
they
thing
might
that
be
I
sorely
think,
disappointed this time.
Well, I think they may or may not be, because the challenge in this is twofold. One, the information that the claims that Taylor has made, that's probably the best way to land it, speak from what he has said, speak to a specific kind of culture.
Or speak to his own culture, a kind of guy who thinks it's okay to get hookers and cocaine.
And that may be the case, Rob, except that's not proven, what he said. So we can push through that, and I hear what you're saying. All I'm saying is that from a media perspective, Taylor has made some claims around the culture. And in that context, from everybody else externally, people like Kate McClymont and all sorts of people who have written column inches about it just this past weekend, they are understandably looking to say, well, in that kind of situation, the culture is led by two people, the EP of the show and the executive director of the network. And while Mark Llewellyn, as the EP of 7 Years Spotlight, may not survive that, I'd say he likely will at this point, but who knows? I don't want to make any huge claims about that either way. While we know that James Warburton is leaving the network and doing so, I'm going to say with his head held high, he has worked hard at 7 and done a great job as CEO. Let's not talk about the share price. The fact that it has come out that he is leaving, I think it's next week, even though he had said he finishes up with 7 on June 30, and that is correct and valid and right. And in him leaving next week, it is probably the fact that he's taking some accrued leave and stuff that he is owed so that he then formally does finish on June 30. Excellent. And at any other time, huge pat on the back, James. Off you go. Have a great day. The difficulty of the timing of his exit is that it looks like it may not be and probably absolutely isn't connected to any of this spotlight kerfuffle. With James leaving now, it just looks bad. It just looks bad.
It's terrible optics.
And so while people won't necessarily get the scalp that I appreciate you're talking about, Rob, in Mark, it looks like a scalp is being offered in James stepping away, air quotes, early. Please understand everything I'm saying in that is an optics, you know, how it looks situation versus what it actually is versus what I don't even know what it actually is, if that makes sense, right?
I'm never going to go until June 30. You can't have an outgoing CEO and an incoming CEO. The new guy probably wants to do his own thing. James is on the way out. It makes sense to me to leave.
Totally.
And to think if James, from what I know about James, to me, it would be quite the opposite, where he would say, if this is going to be how people remember me, I'll be staying on, right? Yeah. So I just think the media misrepresent so much of what's going on. And yes, Robbo, I'm going to let you have your say uninterrupted, and
look, I've had my say. Look, I know what you mean by having scalps. I understand that, but this behavior, though, has been backed up by other evidence over the years, like, you know, and lots of producers, and yes, all of them anonymously have come out and said what it was like to work at Sunday Night and Spotlight. So all of these people are just liars. I don't know. Right. So they're not proven. We can't.
I would offer, Robert, they've probably all got axes to grind. Right. Not
everyone has an axe to grind. Imagine when you work somewhere and you work under someone, it's not always great. And it's okay to talk about that. The fact that there are so many people who came forward and spoke to the media, I mean, you know.
What reports are you reading?
The Age on the weekend.
I read that weekend report.
Yeah. So there was heaps of sources in there that said that it was not nice to work there. It was a really rough place to work. It was robust. And that's okay. That's okay if you want to work. And that's what television is. And it's an environment that people thrive or they don't thrive. So it's not for everyone. I'm not saying that it's a bad thing.
And I think
you can't then say that it's all rainbows and clouds and beautiful flowers. Well, yeah,
but I think the real problem is, and you'd acknowledge this, I think, Rob, one article from particularly, you know, ostensibly a competitor's masthead, right? That's just the bully push and throw of media, particularly modern media, right? The challenge for poor old Seven, and particularly 7 Years Spotlight, is that there is a growing list of articles from across the media that are not even just regurgitating what, Daily Mail style, this person said, and here's the thing, and here's a photo of someone's ass. It's not that. There is a growing list, which builds to a growing call, either from within the media, and take that for what it's worth. However, I think it spills then out into the broader public discourse, which has people then starting to question not just 7 Years Spotlight, but the media as a bigger behemoth, and that says, well, if this is acceptable here, I acknowledge that it's not, and I acknowledge that you're saying that it's not acknowledged, it's not acceptable within Seven. Cool, I take that for what it's worth. The optics, the way it looks to Joe Pundit, If that's what it's like there, then it must be like that everywhere else. And so the media, to some degree, have to kind of close ranks and go, it's not like this fucking everywhere else. And I get that, you know, we're saying, not we're saying, Seven are saying, no, what, this is
sorry,
Taylor.
You're just going to have to help me out because I'm a bit dumb.
Oh, no, mate, take a number, right? In that race, I'm number one.
What is Spotlight actually accused of doing wrong here?
As it stands to my interpretation of what's flying around, allowing the either reimbursement or purchase of some, I will say, morally dubious services.
That was never allowed. He misused a company credit card and he had to give the money back.
How are we in... Do whatever it takes to get the story. So I know you're saying don't take that.
We put a hold on that for a second, Robert.
So someone at the Australia Post office can go and kill a person. Is Australia Post responsible for that?
No, let's not lean into...
Did Australia Post say in a secret meeting, mate, let's go and do whatever you need to get
I have the capacity to mute the both of you. Just chill for a second.
That's just...
I understand what you're getting to, Rob.
It's a terrible example, Rob.
So, how many quotes could you be misquoted on stuff you've said in production offices?
Lots, but I wasn't a boss and I didn't have, there was this relationship between the three men there, which is very well documented. They've all fallen out now. None of them talk to each other.
Anybody want to buy a set of used golf clubs?
I've just come down to it. The actions that you're accusing Spotlight of.
I'm not accusing them. Step back, right back. No. I'm just repeating the massive accusations against Spotlight. Okay. I'm not the one that making them.
Accusations that have been leveled at Spotlight are not the doing of Spotlight. They are the doing of a rogue producer who ultimately had his contract not renewed because of his actions. He said in court he was on the way out and he had to pay the money back. And stupidly, and you might say stupidly, they thought, okay, he's made a big mistake. We're going to give him another chance.
But when he was in the fold, though, everything was okay with what he was doing. So previous stories, it was all okay. Taylor was great. Yes, it was. He's been there for ages. They used his house to do lots of reenactments.
He started doing shit like this.
For once, it'll be tested in court. The thing is, you've got to.
I don't know whether it will, Robbo, unless Seven brings something against Taylor.
Justice Michael Lee will say the evidence this week was basically irrelevant because both Brittany and Brittany. Uncredible witnesses. He's essentially already said that. I don't think the events of that last week, as much as they were great for media fodder, will make no relevance in the case. And I'm also predicting Bruce Lehrman will win the defamation case and there'll be nothing adversely found against Seven.
And that's all fine. But the court of public opinion, though, I think that Seven News needs to jettison Spotlight. If they keep Spotlight as a brand under Seven News, they are just digging their own grave. I think that's ridiculous.
But I think
by the time we get to next Tuesday's podcast, we will know the ratings results of the Ozempic episode at 8:45 after Farmer Wants a Wife on Seven, and we'll see what happens.
Just quickly, Rob, before we dive in there, I just want to put a cap on this for all of us. The difficulty that Seven particularly as a network face is that there has been so much mud flung around this issue that unfortunately, even little bits, but bits of it are sticking. And it's that
within media and elite circles to the viewing public.
No, that's the problem. It's got beyond media and elite circles.
I agree with
public
that.
Public, I know that they've seen the story, but I don't think it's as big as you think it is.
Well, look, I'm going to offer that I agree. The ratings on Sunday will be part of the indication, but not the total story. I think that the long-term viability...
Well, hang on. If Spotlight rates, 100,000, you'll all be saying they've turned on the brand.
Oh, if mate, if Spotlight rates 100,000, it's in the shit.
Hang on. If it rates 500,000 or 600,000, won't you there say, well, it hasn't affected the ratings?
Affected the ratings. Right? Ratings are relative. So if it rates 100...
Hang on. You're all writing it off based off the brand tarnished. No one's going to watch it. But you're now saying that if it does have a win, you won't classify it as a win because it doesn't suit the narrative.
No. I said that ratings are relative, Rob. Okay? If it rates 100,000 viewers, yes, it's in the shit. There is no question, because anything in that time slot that rates 100,000 viewers, FBI, we're talking about you on Channel 10, it's in the shit. If it rates 500 to 600, super. But if it rates 500 to 600 and hypothetically 60 Minutes rates 800,000 to 900,000, I mean, we're starting to see some concern about where maybe the... But as we have talked about, one episode doth not maketh a trend. We need to see where Spotlight's going to be, not just on the first night, week 4, week 6. And I'm going to say this gently, if it makes it that far. But if it gets to week 6 and 8 and the trend is still this kind of gap, then you would have to suggest some damage has been done to that brand and needs to be addressed.
Well, last year, I guess, I think it rated about 500,000 or 600,000. So if it rates that, it's on par.
Not if it's 500,000 or 600,000 this year to last year, it's not, but I understand what you're saying. Because the ratings have changed, right? That's all I mean. It's just that the way that we measure it is different. 600,000 this year is not 600,000 from last year.
Sure.
That's all. It's just a ratings thing.
The AFR is reporting, and Seven haven't denied it, that former Sunrise EP Michael Pell is no longer with the network. After 11 years in the top job, Pell moved to LA to become Seven's Senior Vice President of Entertainment Content, North America. It's believed his contract has not been renewed. Robbo, he was certainly a creative force. That cannot be denied.
No, he was a massive personality at Seven, and obviously he began his climb after being underneath Adam Boland for a while, which was great, and he certainly used that relationship to further his career at Seven, which was fantastic. The thing is, though, what has he produced, though, after this massive fanfare of being over in North America? Now, I have very good sources to say that he didn't even need a card to get into the office. He was never at his desk. He never went there. So, obviously, and we're talking about a share price point of view here. We've got someone who, obviously... was swimming under the cloud of Adam Boland and was able to keep the show going with a lot of other great people around him and obviously the great presenters that they have and have had. But at the end of the day, you know, how much money was spent on getting him over there, putting him up, you know, buying the office space, you know, all that kind of thing, sending him across the country, probably to Europe to go to a few screen conferences and whatnot. What has he ever produced being within that title? And I'm not being...
But
I think anyone that would either be a shareholder at Seven or even anyone working at Seven would go, for goodness sake, we get cuts, we get people being sacked, we've got all of these happening, budget cuts across the business, and yet we're sending someone over here who's produced nothing, has brought nothing back. Now, remember that...
But you don't know that.
Seven had the Oscars. He could have produced an Oscar special. No Oscar special produced. He was right there on the ground. Mate, look, this is really difficult. If we're going to talk about Seven Network stories, it's a little bit difficult with you, I think. But my point, though, is I think would agree.
You can't do that. I wear many hats, which I declare, and I'm not sticking up for Seven here. I was actually just trying to make the point that we don't know what Michael Pell did. And your arrogance and the way you talk is beyond the pale. So, my friend, you have the show.
Hey, Robbo.
All I'm saying, though, is that, you know, that we don't know anything that he's produced. So, I guess he's already been let go. And apparently he was let go a lot of months ago. So, what's you know, I don't understand. I think we should know what he's produced as being that. I can't remember. I think his title was the Senior Vice President of Entertainment Content North America. He was there at the Oscar. I mean, he was in LA. Why wasn't he producing a special? I mean, that's the kind of thing, that's the bread and butter stuff. So obviously you have to go over to London and go to other places, New York and things like that, to get content. But I was just answering the question. So it's unfortunate that the show has now ended like this.
I had a similar question, Robbo, in that I was unsure what Michael's remit was. And I would have thought, given that he did move to the US with, I would have said, reasonable fanfare.
Post
his time on Sunrise and as the director of morning television, that should something have come back or been, you know, branded with the Pell touch, that we would have heard all about it and how Michael's discovered this or, you know, transmitted this. That doesn't mean that he hasn't. However, I like to think that I'm pretty reasonably educated about what goes on in that regard, and hadn't heard anything.
So, no.
So I'm not overly sure.
And the only thing that Neil Shoebridge could say was that, no, he's still with us. So if anyone contacts a PR at a network and they go, well, hang on, this guy that you're paying lots of money to and sent him over in big fanfare, you would never just say, oh, he's still working here. You'd go, actually, he's still working here. And can we point you to A, B, C, D, E, F, G of what he's produced for the network or what he's brought to the network? And that wasn't the only comment from the network was, no, he still works here. And then now he doesn't work there. So, I mean, I think it's a fair comment that I brought up earlier with Rob. What has he done? Because as we both know, we've been in the game a long time. Optics are everything. So if you get someone scratching around, you would absolutely go, we're paying this person, let's say 500 grand. Let's just say 500 grand a year, right? We're paying them that. We've moved them over. And this is what they brought to us. It was one sentence. Michael still works for us.
Yeah, well, now allegedly he doesn't anymore.
No, now he doesn't. But when the journalist was first digging around, that's the one sentence that was put out about Michael Pitt. I don't understand that.
It's a quiet end to what was a glittering career within the Seven Network for Michael Pell. I hope that whatever he turns his hand to next, I'm sure will be a great success. Congratulations, Michael. Well done.
I agree too. You know what, though? What's that? We don't have a script here, but let's go on because we're talking about Bluey. So the Bluey household has been
Hang sold. On. I tried trying to do music. I don't have it.
Oh, no, I didn't know what you were doing. So obviously there's the story that the Bluey house has been sold. Does that mean that Bluey's going? Mog, Bluey's a cash cow. I mean, it's a cash dog.
Yeah, well, it's up for sale. It's not sold yet, Robbo.
That's right. But they're also trying to link this to being close to the show. There's still much more run in the old dog, isn't there?
Well, this is an interesting claim. So we know that the ABC launched with great fanfare at the end of 2023, that this year we're getting a supersized episode of Bluey.
Love it.
And friends, that supersized episode of Bluey is this coming Sunday morning at 8 o'clock on ABC Kids. It's called The Sign. 28 minutes long, brings a whole bunch of benefits, not least of which will be that it will register in the VOZ ratings. So we'll get to see how many of all of us suckers have gotten up and watched it at 8 a.m., whether we are adults with no small people or we have lots of little people and we need to watch it. And of course, BVOD will play a huge portion in that. That's the ratings bit done. As far as the future of the show, this is the big question, Robbo, because when they said that there was this episode called The Sign coming, great. Mm. We thought nothing of it. And in fact, all of the promo about it showed that it was one of Bluey's uncle's weddings, right? As in, Bluey's uncle is getting married. Great. Bluey and Bingo, the two little core little girls, get to dress up as flower girls and be a part of the...
Lovely.
Fabulous, yeah. Right? Yeah. Hooray. And then at the end of the episode that aired Sunday just past called Ghost Basket, also new, where they make believe play the grannies are back and their house is being sold. Ha, 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 very funny. But they save it because they're ghosts. At the end of it, when their mum, Chili, runs out of the house, the shot pulls back and reveals a for sale sign for real out the front of the house. So the house is for sale. Of course, the questions are then what's happening, why the heel is selling the house, unanswered questions that we expect will be answered on Sunday. Now, this has thrown open wide speculation, which I've been happy to fall into.
Yeah.
Because at the same time, in a perfect bit of marketing, Ludo Studios have listed Bluey's house, the animated picture of the house, on domain.com.au.
Yeah.
And they haven't just listed it for sale and given all of the good reasons about why you should buy it and all those sorts of things. They've also put in like a character who is the real estate character that popped up from season two. He's selling the house. I think his name is Bucky.
Yeah.
And the phone number that is listed on the domain.com.au listing, when you ring that number, the person who played that character says, oh, sorry, can't get the phone right now, blah, blah, but if you're interested, make sure you leave it. Like a real real estate kind of phone. It's brilliant.
Which now, is what makes Bluey so good, right? Because they capture these essences of real life. So we know that the real estate agent is the real estate. And that's why the kids love it. But when you watch it as an adult, and I've watched it with my nephews and niece,
yes,
you're like, oh, my God.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
That's exactly what these people are. You know, that's what that's what happens. You know, mum and dad want to have some special time, or mum and dad are hungover. That's what makes this bloody show work.
Oh, but it's, and the benefit of is Bluey is that it's super layered, right? So it's not just giving us this great story that our little people love. There's also this story that all of the parents or older people go, again, got me right in the heart.
Yeah.
What's wrong, mum and dad? Nothing. I'm just tired. You know, we've got all of that wrapped up in the middle of it. So with this happening, it's meant that lots of people have been suggesting, oh, what's going on? We don't know. What are the healers doing? Blah, blah, blah. I'm going to put it to you, Robbo, and this is an unpopular view, that this is the end of Bluey. That this episode coming this Sunday, The Sign, is actually the farewell, with Bluey going out on top. And let me put to you the reasons I know.
Like the Seinfeld way?
Hold that lip strong.
Yeah, okay, sorry.
Come on. I mean, in a great week for it. Curb Your Enthusiasm finishes, Bluey finishes. What a great bookend. the reasons why I'm going to put to you that it's a case. One, it's very hard for Joe Brum, the creator, and the Ludo team to deliver such high quality storytelling over, what is it, nearly 40 episodes every season. And we've had 3 seasons so far. Yep. That's lots of stories. In those 3 seasons, the girls, Bluey and Bingo, have grown up once. They've had a birthday. So I think they've gone from 5 and 4 to 6 and 5. I'm sorry if I've got that wrong. That's where I remember.
No, but yes, we get it. Yeah.
So they've grown up a little bit. But of course, 6 years ago, when they cast those voices, the girls that have done those voices have grown up.
And they've had to digitally alter the voices. Is that right, Mocky?
It is my understanding. They have done some Funky's Chicken stuff to keep them sounding like they are little kids, little girls who they portray.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, it's 2024, and they could have done a whole bunch of work, and by now could be delivering via AI all of the lines for those girls. You know, sign a contract here. We're taking your voice and off you go. Blah, 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 in perpetuity.
Yeah.
The difficulty is, in the midst of this, they're growing up. It's difficult to deliver all the storytelling. And then you also get to acknowledge, we could churn this out for another 3 or 4 seasons, no worries. But would it be as good? Would Bluey be as beloved if we did that and milked it dry? Or we just went, you know what? Here is Bluey at its very best. High five, we're done. The girls get to grow up, and no one really, like, they've kept it very closest to who the young people are that have played
those
kids.
Yeah, that's right.
For good reason.
Yeah.
Let's let them be kids and allow that to be the case. So I reckon, here's a great way to do it. The healers sell their house because of whatever reason, right? They're going around Australia. They're moving internationally. Something. The house is so iconic. And in the exit, they get to teach all of us another lesson about what it means to deal with change and to move on from things that you love. This is the one house that those two little girls have known their whole life, and ostensibly they have to leave it. There will be deep sadness for them and, by extension, the Bluey audience. So why not let Bluey do what it does well and help us learn a little bit about how we ourselves can deal with that sort of change?
I think it's a very good point, Mocky. It is such a beautiful show. I'm not ready to say goodbye, I don't think. And I'd like
neither.
To think, and I think that's important. And obviously, we're going to have repeats, and it's going to be one of those shows that we continue to watch. And there he is behind you. Oh, sorry, Sheep.
It's all right.
They, them, whatever. I don't know. But look, Bluey's wonderful. It is such an important show that has come out of Australian television. And it's wonderful, as you know, and I think a lot of people who watch the podcast know. I watch a lot of TikTok. I do enjoy it. But there are so many wonderful videos from all over the world where people are photographing or videoing, you know, their kids, whatever, watching Bluey. You know, there've been those wonderful videos where they've shown that the kids are now talking in an Aussie accent, or they say certain things Australian because they've watched Bluey so much, which I think is really lovely. It's simple storytelling, but it's complex storytelling.
Absolutely.
It's engaging storytelling. And all of those things, the animating style, the the storylines that we all know and love from either, you know, being parents or kids or uncles or nephews or nieces, you know, all of that kind of thing. It's such a wonderful thing. Every time you kept saying healers, I thought all I could think about is maybe they could move to Mount Thomas. I mean, that's a really vague kind of a very...
Oh, mate, I've been making claims that it's the greatest documentary about an animated family in
Dollywood. You can see Bluey the college years. You know, because, you know, from 90210,
could you imagine?
Bluey the college. Yeah, so Bluey goes to uni.
Wouldn't that just turn it on its head? Oh, my gosh.
Bluey goes to uni. Oh, my God. I mean, that's
mate, if Bluey went to uni, all of a sudden we're all going to feel 165. Yeah, look, we could very quickly turn this into the Bluey podcast. Probably best that we don't. Yes. Friends, we will know from this Sunday, 8 o'clock it kicks off, 28 minutes long, The Sign, the final episode of season 3 of Bluey. I'm saying the final episode ever, but who knows? Happy to
it
be
deserves right. Prime time. It deserves a replay on prime time.
Of all the things, Robbo, this is one I'll be absolutely stoked to be wrong about, but my spidey senses are tingling and I don't think I'm wrong. So we'll see what happens. Bluey, possibly, probably finishing up this Sunday. We've got a few other stories to talk about, but before we dive into them, we probably just need to pick up the fact that this is now a 2 and not a 3. There was a conversation at the start of this podcast that bled through. The first two stories were about 7 issues, one of which was 7 News Spotlight, which Rob McKnight, our usual host, works for in a freelance capacity, which he declares regularly. That's no concern or question. And we're having some conversation about the current sort of stuff that's flying around connected to the Lehrman Channel 10 defamation case. In and of itself, that was going to be a challenging conversation. We knew that happened and we got through it. We then moved on to the conversation about Michael Pell. And I think by that point, Rob had had his fill. I do not profess to speak for him. I do know that Rob got upset with the line of questioning and approach that Robbo was offering. We're all big kids here. We've all got feelings that can get hurt sometimes. Rob decided to step away. If Rob returns, that would be fabulous. If Rob doesn't, that is Rob's choice. For now, tonight, we will push on and finish the show. And who knows what could happen next week? Could just be me. Could just be me talking to myself.
No, I'll be frigging back. I'll tell you right now.
Oh, it's because you've got nothing on like me, Robbo. Yeah. We've got a couple other stories that we will talk about before we turn our very glorious eyes to the excellent TV Binge Box segment, which could go for a record time tonight.
Yeah, because you won't be wrapped up.
Because I won't get wrapped.
It might be you at the end, yeah.
Yeah, look, we'll see how we go. There's an interesting story, and by interesting, I mean not very interesting at all, in the AFR that talks about Nine and Foxtel battling for Tabcorp's Sky Racing channels in a streaming context to bring them to their various platforms. Robbo, I personally hold the opinion that A, not great, and B, as you can read on the ticker at the bottom, compete to grab a hold of Tabcorp's streaming animal cruelty competition that also destroys human lives. I think that gambling is a blight on our country and that horse racing is horrendous. What do you think?
I agree with you, and I really do. I think that the amount of advertising for gambling is atrocious in this country. And if you go to any kind of bathroom in a pub or anywhere in RSL, you'll see that there are all these posters saying, you know, you need help, you know, gambling, you can get help for it. It's a difficult problem. Social media is saturated with gambling advertising. We then had a little bit of a reprieve, or not a reprieve, but the gambling community going, oh, okay, so we'll put a black screen at the end of every ad and big white text, and that's us just going, well, that's what we need to do. I think it's grubby. Look, do I think that the future is that possibly one of the networks will have one of their additional channels as being a gaming channel?
But 90% of the weight there was some of the bloody, like, you know, rubbishy, you know, shopping channel stuff that
That's what I mean. Yes. So are we gonna see, because also what we're seeing on TikTok are these not fake, but you know, they're set up like our show, kind of, in the way of, and they're talking about
set up like odds. Our show. What dodgy?
But you know what I mean. Like there are odds, and they're talking about who they're going to pick for the football this weekend, and you know, multi bets and same day multis. Not, and that's how they set it up, and they frame it on social media as if it's a TV show. That's the future, and I think it's almost an audition from social media and from, you know, Tabcorp and Sportsbet and all that kind of thing to say to the networks, hey, we can do this. It's going to be cheap. Just give us one of your channels and we will pay you this amount of money. I think it's around the corner then, Mocky. I mean, we don't want it to happen, but isn't it around the corner? Because look, kind of revenue, they're just
from a commercial point of view, Robbo, I agree. It's all but a done deal. That's why we've got Foxtel and Nine battling it out for the rights to get it anyway.
Yeah,
that doesn't make it a good thing, right? The point where, frankly, I would offer that in the same way that in my lifetime, advertising for cigarette sales has completely vanished from everywhere because it kills people.
Okay.
While gambling in and of itself doesn't directly contribute, i.e. like a cigarette would give you lung cancer and you die, it is almost identical in what gambling does to families and gambling does to people's lives. Hello, welcome to the Woke Lefty Mog podcast.
I'm agreeing with you.
I know you are, but I'm just thinking about everybody else, and we don't have Rob here to balance me out. So, you know, it's swung very hard, friends. Now, Robbo, you're a fan of television. I think it's fair to say. Were you watching the Logies last year?
I did.
Do you remember who won the gold Logie by any chance?
Of course, Sonia Kruger.
Right, the lady herself, the lady of the moment. Yeah, now, can you remember much of Sonia Kruger's speech? Because she can't. She can now, because I'm sure she's seen more than one edit of it. There is, funnily enough, timed for the return of Lego Masters on Sunday, Hamish Blake appears in Stellar Magazine, where he was talked about a whole bunch of things, not least of which is his career or not, and all of those sorts of things, but the moment in Sonia Kruger's Gold Logie acceptance speech, where she passed an offhanded joke, and it was a joke, about the fact that their shared manager said to her that he was wanting to get rid of Hamish and focus all of her time on Sonia because Sonia's far more valuable. Ha, 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 ha.
Lols,
Lols, right. And we're at the point where it is 12-something at night. Most of the people in the room are well pissed. They've cut to Hamish, who's pulled a face in response to that joke. But the problem was, again, we get no context. Hamish has said in the story, oh, no, I was pulling a face for the benefit of my wife and Andy, who are at the table, and we were joking about that. It's just that's the moment that they caught me and broadcast in response to the joke. And that wasn't how I felt anyway. But he then also went on to say that, oh, but I should have probably put out on social media, I don't care. It wasn't a thing. Everyone's trying jokes. I'm not offended by it, blah, blah, blah. But because he didn't say anything, it became a much bigger thing than it actually is. Do people care? I mean, if we talk about the media bubble, Robbo, do people care about that shit?
I'm going to say, and I don't want to obviously dig up the earlier part of the episode, I don't think people care about this thing. They care about what they're watching.
TV Black Box podcast, guaranteed.
Correct. But the people who pull the strings in the background and these kind of in jokes, you know, we can talk about Patty. So Bert used to talk about Patty, but we knew who Patty was, right? Mm. So you can talk about those kind of things. When you talk about the manager in the background saying this, that is very much an in-the-room, an in-joke kind of thing.
Very much, right? The problem is when it's broadcast to television, all but live, and we don't get the in-the-room vibe and the in-the-room reaction, it can make for quite a, you know, difficult perceived faux pas, can't it?
Of course, and I agree with what you're saying. I also think, though, that Hamish is a consummate professional, right? And especially... It's not like there are secret cameras. There is a camera right there looking for reactions, and it's there anyway. This is a man who's been around long enough. So it's not like it's his
gold Logie winner himself
from Maths. Exactly. He's not a contestant of Maths who this is their first time at the Logies. The camera's right there. You're on, and you're on anywhere in that room. I was lucky enough to go there once in 2017, a wonderful night, but there are cameras everywhere. But as we know, like right now, that's a camera right there. He did the reaction, I think, to get the reaction, or he made the facial expression to get the reaction as he said. I just don't think there's anything to this. There's no validity. He's a professional. If he felt anything, it would have been hidden. This is a non-story, and this is a bubble story. No one gives 100%. A shit. Yeah.
And I think that the one thing that Hamish probably delivered that maybe some people hadn't recognized, I think most people, certainly watching this, listening to this podcast, would recognize. Mm-hmm. When it comes to something like the Logies, it's one of the last big, full-on, proper live entertainment events that happens, you know, in the calendar. So when everybody, and they are all, God bless them, people that just want attention. So if they get the lights on them and a camera in front of them and the microphone on, they are going to either do their best or they're going to do their best to throw a line in. They're going to try and make it memorable, make that.
It's performing.
Right? They are performing. Exactly. You're spot on. And as he said, there are jokes that land. There are jokes that don't. You just move on. It just and is also, what it is.
Can I say, with Sonny Kruger, though, you get a gold logie. As you said, it's the end of the night. It is in that bubble. It is
everyone's
amazing.
Tired and emotional.
Everyone wants, but, you know, she got it. So we also can't judge, you know, we're used to seeing our TV people really polished, but it's really lovely just to see. It's off the cuff. And like you say, that the road from being nominated to winning the Gold Logie is long. There's lots of press. There's lots of promo, both within your own network and also in press. Obviously, the day of, the day before, and the Red Cup. It's a huge thing. And you are one of the people. And essentially, I think, how do I say this? It's almost like you're one of the losers, if you understand what I'm saying here. Mm. You are the loser unless you're the winner, if that makes sense.
Oh, so no, that's actually how winning works.
That's right. You've got to put on this face and you are front and center constantly.
Yeah.
Well, who's the gold lucky? Well, and then you've got all this, you know, these ideas going around. Well, they shouldn't get it because of this. They should get it. So then you finally, we get to midnight, right?
Yep.
Everyone's pissed as a tick. They've eaten all this food.
I think they're tired and emotional, though.
Yeah, tired and emotional. Sorry, that's what I should have.
Is this thing on?
Tired and emotional. And you get up there. Look, she's going to make some jokes that don't land, and that's okay. Right. And you know, or she's going to make some in-jokes because you are literally running off adrenaline at this point. Because it really is. If you're on TV, you want to be on that stage. And when you get there, it's not going to be polished. No. So I just think...
And frankly, given how long the Logies runs and how much of a punish sometimes it can be, when you get to that hour of the night, no one is after a 20-minute eloquent speech. They actually want you to fuck it up. They want
they
you
really
to, go.
To go to the network party. Let's get on.
That's right. Shut up. We're all going to the party.
To the other place, I meant. Not
The other place. Just to ease the pain for those in the chat that are wondering, my understanding is that, yes, Sam Pang is a lock for the host this year.
Oh, I
agree. It would be difficult to find anybody to follow him at this point. But it'll be great to have him back in his writing team. And for those who are unaware of who Hamish Blake is, the one person that is on the podcast chat, I'd just like to remind you that you can probably see him everywhere dressed as a large Hubble box. Because he and Andy Lee are currently the faces of the Hubble campaign. Everybody's Hubbling. Our final story for tonight before we move to the binge box is going to be a really quick one. Congratulations to Kevin Perry, our lead editor at TVBlackBox.com.au, who managed to get out a great little bit of information. Now, we knew that Jeopardy Australia had been made for Nine in the UK and that it was coming this year. Hosted by, a guy you might have heard of, Stephen Fry. Great. Robbo, Kevin was able to tell us when it's landing in Australia. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us when?
It's going to be a Saturday night, I guess. I mean, who knows? It's going to be buried pretty deep into nothing, isn't it?
Let's pretend that I don't know how television works. If you're hosting or delivering an entertainment show other than, let's say, 20 years ago, Hey Hey, It's Saturday, on a Saturday night at 7:30, how much do you back that show?
Look, it's kind of like, you know, you've got a couple of guinea pigs and there's some that are nice, there are some that are ugly. And this is the guinea pig you put out and you leave it out overnight, hoping that a hawk gets it. If a hawk doesn't get it, fine. You'll bring it back in the next week and put it back out there on the Saturday. Is this analogy working for you?
I'm it's making up down as I go along.
Sure. But you know what I mean? But it's just, it
doesn't scream people, like the network supports it, does it?
Well, it clearly means that I would suggest they've seen some episodes.
There's only six too. Like, it's a short run.
And they've seen something and they've gone, no. And so, again, where are the people on the ground? So if you've only got a short run, surely you've got people on the ground going, this isn't working. We're going to we're going to work overnight and we're going to fix what... I know it's a format. I get it. But do we need to revitalize the questions for an Australian audience? Are the questions not working? Are our contestants not getting the questions? The fact is that there were six episodes and a network executive or no one on the ground or producers on the ground, no one has gone, until it's got back here. We've got the six tapes. Let's sit back in the viewing room. You know, it's in North Sydney.
Feet up.
Let's put it in. Feet up. Let's have a little wine. Oh, my God, this is shit house. We were going to put this on, you know, a Wednesday night or a Thursday night, whatever.
Not anymore.
Stuff it. It's going on a Saturday night. Look, surely that screams that this is not working.
Possibly. The real challenge for Nine now is that this... ostensibly, and we probably need to keep our powder a little dry. We haven't seen an episode yet.
Yeah, of course. It's
coming shortly. But this would mean for two failures to launch for Nine this year after the massive success of Married at First Sight. Food Stars Australia is being burned off tonight, tomorrow night. Like tonight's episode, I think, is nearly a 3-hour epic where two people get eliminated, right? A clear sign shit off.
Yeah.
And then everything, I think, is then being compressed and condensed into next week. Done, get out of here. And the next thing will come along. And for Jeopardy to then be Saturday night really does suggest that, well, maybe it could have been better. Who even knows?
But like, sorry, I know, but like you said, 6 episodes.
Mm.
You're spending a lot of money. We're over there anyway. We're using the set. We've got Stephen Fry, all fantastic.
Yep. Never heard of him.
But exactly. But all of a sudden, someone's gone somewhere after they've spent, no doubt, a few million dollars to get this done. And I'm being conservative there.
Yep.
They've then gone after the fact. Are we then expected to feel sorry for networks where make decisions on the bloody ground, not make it in the viewing, you know, in North Sydney? Oh, shit. Burn it. What? Makes no sense. Anyway.
Jeopardy Australia, friends. Tune in Saturday in a couple of weeks. Well done, Kevin, on getting that out there because I think it's beat everybody else to it. And that's the kind of exclusive you can expect from TV Black Box. Not only great research and knowing the industry and what's going on, but a podcast that goes from 3 to 2 in the middle of the podcast.
Yeah, keeps on going.
And now we get to open that creak. sorry, that's a big throwback, friends. The TV Big Box is here. Robbo, what have you been watching this week?
Okay, so Gillian Anderson in Scoop.
Amazing.
This
right?
is
on
ridiculous.
Netflix?
On Netflix. Thank obviously you. Follows the story of the journo who got the story, and the producers, rather, at Newsnight on the BBC who got that. I started watching it again last night. So after I watched The Scoop, I watched the interview, the original with Prince Andrew.
Yes. This was the interview where he claims that he can't sweat and like can't sweat, in relation to the Jeffrey, what's his name thing?
Epstein. Yeah, sorry. I couldn't sweat. It was brilliant. The way he just goes like that, even there. It was cringeworthy to watch it on Scoop. I could not finish it. And I've tried. This is actually probably my fifth or sixth time trying to watch that original interview. And I can't do it. It's so uncomfortable.
What would have made that interview better would have been when he said, I can't sweat, and just a little bead.
And the actor's eyes. And I've looked at behind the scenes vision of this. And you can see there's so many prosthetics for that actor as well. In wide shots, Gillian Anderson nails this. Now, it's a very clear haircut, which is great. The mannerisms, it's kind of, she kind of hunches a little bit. Gillian Anderson is brilliant. And we remember that for a long time, Gillian Anderson was in the shadow of David Duchovny and got paid way less than David Duchovny on The X-Files and everything. I adore her, and I think it's fantastic that she has now proven herself to be a far more versatile actress in working far more than he did.
Oh, remember she turned up in was it the last couple of or a season of The Crown as Margaret Thatcher?
Yeah, exactly.
And was amazing.
And she's fantastic. So Scoop was amazing. I'll say this also, a brilliant runtime. It didn't feel the need to Oppenheimer the shit out of the story. And that's what I'm going to say. Anything that goes longer than it needs to is an Oppenheimer, which is shit. So I adored this.
Oppenheimer was great.
Oh, it went too long. But a really good time frame, a great behind the scenes of what can happen when you're trying to get that interview. It was brilliant, really, really good. That's what I would watch this week, Mocky.
So you just watched Scoop?
Okay, well, you don't say that because I've also watched like...
Well done, Robbo. You just watched Scoop.
No, and I also watched Chicago Med, but all of these shows I keep watching, so that's the newest one.
Right.
I'm working my way through these other ones. So I just thought I'd, you know, short and sweet. That's how I do it.
That's great. And look, I'll keep it reasonably short and sweet as well. I could take full advantage of this situation, but that would only heap burning coals, and I don't want to do that. The two shows that I'm going to talk about for my TV Binge Box tonight, one of which you may guess slash may not guess, and that is Married at First Sight Season 11. It finished up last night, and no question, on Nine, that is, available now on Nine now in its entirety. No question it ruled the roost. Like for most nights, it was 800 to 1 million viewers ahead of its nearest rival.
It's still amazing. Like it's got
phenomenal money, right?
And everyone talks about it.
And that's the thing. The interesting thing, so why, Robbo, right? Because this is a question we ask, why do so many people watch Married at First Sight? And I think it's a combination. The reason I watch it as much as anything is because A, as a commentator, I need to be able to talk about it. B, I am addicted to the drama, like the completely confected in some cases. drama of who did what to whom and how all of the things played out, fine. And at the same time, and this is where I think we start to hook in other people, fuck, I'm glad that's not me. Like, yeah. I'm very, very happily married. You know, I'm married now to my glorious wife for, 23? This is my 12th year of wedded bliss. No, 22nd, shit. 22nd year of wedded bliss.
Yeah.
And I love her deeply. Yeah. And if she was to pass or hang me out to dry and leave, I'm going to die as the man who attempted to download all of the internet porn. Because I just couldn't face, dating.
Sorry.
If this is what dating is, I just couldn't stare that down. That would be horrendous.
Sorry, that just made me sweat. I broke into a sweat there. Sorry.
Right, so much going wrong in all of that saying that I said, and I apologize. The difficulty around maths is, we are on season 11, just finished, Robbo. It's been on air for 11 years.
It's amazing. And
for the first couple of years, it was a bit of an interesting thing, bit of its own thing, and then they have refined it, and turned it into the monster that it is. Honestly, for the last 5 years, I've watched the entire season and gone, I don't know how they can do better, or like be more outrageous. Not better, but more dramatic, more outrageous, more crazy than this. And each year, mate, each year, the past 3 years, I've gone to their, you know, season sneaky peek launch at the first episode thing and had the chance to speak to particularly John Aiken and the EP responsible for making the show. And I've said this each year, I just don't know how you do it. Like each year I go, that's it, you're done. It's not any better than this or crazier than this. And each year you guys turn it on its head and they go, wait until you see this year. And they're fucking right. Every time it's stupid how crazy it is.
There's no shortage of trash in this country, Malky, and they are very happy to get in front of the camera.
Oh, but that's what we're learning more and more. And even down to the point where in the past years, please go with me on the use of the word legitimate in this. We've legitimately had cheating scandals where partner A in this relationship and partner B in this relationship have hooked up quietly and turned into new couple, right? That we've actually had what we would understand to be proper cheating. This year, nobody hooked up with anybody else while they were on the show. Like there was, and I appreciate that emotional cheating is still cheating. Like I don't want to discount that. Yeah. Certainly an allegation around that for Jono and Ellie. If you know who those names are, friends, you're as sad as I am. there was just legitimately people struggling in their stuff together. Anyway, Married at First Sight, just flipping outrageous.
All right, Mocky.
If you want to
cheer. Give us your up mocks and down mocks, mate.
Well, the other show that I'm going to say is the other one. Friends, Friday morning, Taskmaster UK season 17 is playing out on Binge. It's just great. It's just great. Greg Davies and Alex Horn, again, for the 17th season, are delivering amazing things. For those that are waiting for the Australian series, season 2 and now season 3 are filmed and in the can.
Brilliant. Good.
Season 2 is about to come out on 10. Season 3, I would hope they will deliver to us later this year. That's Taskmaster Australia. But season 17 of Taskmaster UK is brilliant, phenomenal, so worth the while. And you don't have to watch it season to season to know what's going on. Correct, you can just jump in, and best to start on episode 1 of a season, but you can jump in at any point and just go, I get this show. It's stupid and I love it. Because it is stupid and I love it. It's delightful. A quick up, Malk. American Rust season 2 on Prime Video is really worth it. That's a big up, Malk. And I'll throw at you Clarkson's Farm season 2, brought to you by Prime Video as well, friends. Really? Season 3 of Clarkson's Farm, the third and final season, is about to drop. I think it's in 2 weeks' time. I've seen the first couple of eps. Stands and applauds at just how much of a buffoon Jeremy Clarkson is and is willing to
work.
It's what it is.
Look, you know, Malky, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Look, hey, thanks for your time, Robbo. It's great to be here.
Yeah, great to have you. Where can we, though? I'm just trying to think of what's the end of this. Where can people get, where the people in the industry get their news?
Yes. Look, they can go to tvblackbox.com.au and all of our relevant socials, but certainly the website, tvblackbox.com.au. That's tvblackbox.com.au, the place where the TV industry get their news. We've got exclusives. We've got podcasts Yep. Singular. We've got stories. We've got all of the latest things that is playing out. And let me tell you, you may even want to turn out sometime this week to see what the hell happens with the podcast, because even I don't know at this point. Robbo, it's been great to have you.
And we've got to get to the late news. So
Sandra Sully's warming it up.
That's right. She's waiting to go. Good to see everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.